From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're quickly approaching another COVID-19 winter, and at this point in the pandemic, we know what can keep COVID-19 from spreading and what can keep most of us safe from death and severe disease, namely basic health precautions to stop the spread and vaccines to keep us alive. Nevertheless, we're still facing another winter surge in infections. As of this broadcast, 5 Illinois counties are at high community transmission levels per the CDC. Vermilion and Ford counties in east central Illinois, Pike County along the Mississippi River, and Stevenson and Ogle counties up north near the Wisconsin border. But beyond COVID-19, experts are also concerned about two other respiratory illnesses with rising case numbers, the flu and respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. RSV is of particular concern now, as cases among children are being diagnosed much earlier in the season than usual, and pediatric hospitals are already reporting being overwhelmed with patients. Here's Dr. Frank Belmonte of Advocate Children's Hospital in Oak Lawn, Illinois, speaking to WLS-TV in Chicago, comparing RSV hospitalizations to initial COVID-19 hospitalizations.
This is our March of 2020. So this is the pediatric version of the beginning of the pandemic, and it has really taxed all of us, for sure.
It's leading some experts to fear we'll see a triple-demic this winter. COVID-19, flu, and RSV. Although we might also get some pushback on that concept later in the conversation. Stay tuned for that. Joining us now to talk about all this are three doctors involved with this across the state of Illinois. Dr. Larry Kosiolik is infectious disease physician and medical director of infection prevention and medical control at the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago. Dr. Kosiolik, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being here.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, professor of and chief of infectious diseases at the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine in Springfield. She's also medical advisor at the Sangamon County Department of Public Health. Dr. Sundaresan, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us finally is Dr. Robert Healy, associate chief medical officer of quality at Carle Health System in Urbana. Dr. Healy, welcome to the 21st Show to you.
Thanks. Great to be here, Brian.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the upcoming flu and COVID and RSV and everything else season as we're heading into the winter? Do you have questions about vaccinations, the latest bivalent booster that's come out for COVID-19? Let us know. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us. At 21st Show, at 21st Show. So, Dr. Healy, I want to begin with you. What is the situation right now with Carle Health System?
Yeah, so in our 5 hospitals, we are seeing the usual, I guess you call it usual now after a couple of years, amount of COVID-19. So kind of a baseline of people getting sick, needing to be admitted, some going to the ICU. But it really hasn't changed much. And we're hoping it stays that way, but as you alluded to, it might not, and we could talk about that further. With flu, we're seeing a lot more flu in the outpatient setting, and that hasn't translated yet to a lot of admissions, so we're thankful for that, but we expect it will soon. And then really RSV is the big player. We've seen RSV rates higher than at any time, and our pediatric beds, our pediatric ICU are just full. We're still able to care for patients, but it's becoming concerning.
Becoming concerning. Okay. Dr. Kosiolik, same question to you then. What's the situation at Lurie Children's Hospital in terms of those diseases?
I would say our experience is quite similar. Our COVID-19 rate currently is about our nadir has been in other periods between surges, which is, roughly 3 to 5 positive tests a day. But the vast majority of children with COVID-19 are not particularly ill, and we still identify children without symptoms who test positive. Influenza, we've seen a doubling of influenza cases each week for the last 3 to 4 weeks. Those numbers are still relatively low, and we anticipate that those influenza numbers will increase significantly over the next several weeks. We are on the tail end of an enterovirus season, This enterovirus season was particularly severe with a strain of enterovirus that's more associated with respiratory disease. And so we're still seeing a lot of cases, but RSV in the last few weeks has surpassed enterovirus and become our most predominant respiratory virus. There's a good portion of kids under the age of 3 that haven't seen RSV. That's the age of children who tend to do worse. And so not surprisingly, we are seeing a lot of respiratory illness, both in outpatients, acute care, hospital beds, and in our intensive care units.
All right. So maybe this is a good opportunity then to pause and talk a little bit more about RSV. And Dr. Sundaresan, I'm going to ask you to do that. If you can just begin, what is RSV? What are the symptoms?
So RSV is one of the respiratory viruses that you typically see in the season, more so affecting children. And we also worry about that in the adult population, particularly if they are immunosuppressed. So what we are seeing now, again, 0 to 17 years, most of the RSV has been identified in our area too, predominantly 0 to 17 years, much less in between 17 years and 65, and even lesser 65 and above. But you really worry about them if they're of advanced age and if they're immunosuppressed. Symptoms are very similar to what you see with other respiratory viruses, runny nose, cough, fever, wheezing in children. And in immunosuppressed patients, they can present with similar symptoms as well. So when somebody presents with symptoms, you have to test and try to get the correct diagnosis.
And Dr. Kosiola, can you say a little bit more? You mentioned that a lot of the children younger than 3 have not seen this. Why is there this surge this year? How is this different from years past?
Yeah, I think it's very, very important to make this point. When talking about this as different, I think we need to think about illness in children in two phases. Before mid-March 2020 and since mid-March 2020 when COVID started. What we're seeing right now is not unusual or unheard of. RSV and influenza occur every year in the fall and winter, and they sicken a lot of children. And children's hospitals are used to surges in respiratory illness, not this early, but it's not too far away. I mean, normally around November, December, we're preparing for surges of RSV and influenza, which sometimes can occur at the same time and cause much strain on the pediatric healthcare infrastructure. What's different about this year, I think there's two very important things that are different about this year. One is the fact that for the last 2.5 years, with COVID predominating the spread of respiratory illness in our communities, with many of the things that we did to save lives over the last 2.5 years, those things prevented a lot of routine infections in kids, not only RSV and flu, but also strep throat and ear infections and other things. Every year, there's a good portion, the majority of children under the age of 2 are exposed to RSV every single year. For the last 2.5 to 3 years, there hasn't been as much RSV. And so there's a whole lot of children that are not yet immune to this virus that are now being exposed for the first time and becoming quite ill. With influenza, I think that risk is much more significant. There has been very little influenza, almost none, spreading in our communities for the last 2.5 to 3 years. And so we have a near complete immunity debt in our population of children that are this young that have not yet seen influenza, and the vast majority of whom have not been vaccinated yet against influenza. And so the fact that these viruses are occurring at the same time and there's a whole lot of susceptible children is going to place a large burden on our pediatric healthcare infrastructure. The other major problem that's different this year is that in March of 2020, it became very, very clear that adults were going to become much more ill with COVID-19 than children. There are going to be a whole lot more adults with COVID-19 than any other illness, and hospitals would have to make some very difficult decisions about how to expand resources available to take care of very sick adults with this virus. And for that reason, many hospitals made a difficult decision to reduce or even eliminate pediatric healthcare resources. In the state, since the start of the pandemic, 20% of pediatric inpatient beds have been closed. And so now we're dealing with what now is a normal surge of RSV and influenza that is going to be more severe than a typical pre-pandemic year, but without as many resources available statewide to provide care to these children. So we have to do more with a whole lot less.
Okay, so let me just see if I can put a fine point on what you're saying. So what I hear you saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, but is that the RSV hasn't mutated. It's not any more virulent this year or anything. It's just that you have a lot more kids who, because they were either born during the pandemic or were extremely young when the pandemic started, maybe their parents kept them home, kept them more isolated, did not expose them. They were not as exposed to as many viruses and other sort of infections out there in the world. And so now it's just kind of like a backup, if you will. And now all these kids are getting exposed, and that's why there's this surge in cases. It's not that anyone is any more susceptible to it or the virus has changed, right?
Correct. Yeah, there's nothing new or different about RSV and nothing new or different about influenza that would make us more concerned about the pathogen. What's making us concerned is that there's a whole lot more children that have no banked immunity against these viruses, and the number of hospital beds to take care of them is less than in years past.
Dr. Healy, does that part, especially about the changing in hospital priorities, right, making more room for adults in critical care situations with COVID, did that happen at Carl as well?
Yeah, definitely spot on. As I heard that response, I started thinking, you know, we're locally, of course, like every hospital in the state and nation, are looking at this issue and how can we care better for our younger population. And we're making changes now to have more beds available for the pediatric age group. But what we're really doing is borrowing from the next problem, which we've all been talking about, which will be the influenza that will probably hit us really hard really soon.
Well, let's talk more about that. And we have about 3 minutes before we need to take a break. But Dr. Healy, why is influenza such a concern this year?
Well, there's some theoretical things such as, you know, we haven't seen much of it in the past couple of years. So the same immunity that was talked about for the RSV applies to influenza as well. And also, Dr. Kosielek talked about the fact that kids haven't been immunized as much. And that's a concern, and we're trying to remedy that with all immunizations, but especially the flu shot and the COVID booster for those that are appropriate for it. The other thing is we have some predictive values from the Southern Hemisphere because, you know, that winter and flu season hits Australia, for instance, months before it hits here. And Australia had a pretty bad year for influenza this year, and we expect the same thing to happen here.
And Dr. Sundaresan, I know we've been talking, Dr. Healy there mentioned vaccination for kids. Could you know off the top of your head, what are the recommendations for flu vaccines for children or the age limits, the bounds on that?
Yeah, any child 6 months or over, anybody 6 months or over is eligible for flu vaccinations. And we want to try to get as many people vaccinated as possible for flu vaccines. We have multiple choices, in fact, for flu vaccines. In fact, now recently the ACIP met, which is the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices. They had met and made some changes for people that are allergic to eggs as well. So we have two vaccine choices, even for people that may potentially have egg allergies. So we have egg-free vaccines available for people that potentially have that allergy. So a lot of choices for flu vaccination 6 months and over. Everybody is eligible to take this. People that are pregnant, immunocompromised, advanced age should definitely take that. Children should definitely take the flu vaccine.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break, and we're going to continue this conversation when we come back. We're talking with Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, who is professor and chief of infectious diseases at the SIU School of Medicine in Springfield. Also, Dr. Robert Healy, who is associate chief medical officer of quality at Carle Health System based in Urbana. And Dr. Larry Kosiolek, who is infectious disease physician and medical director of infection prevention and control at the Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago. We'd love to hear your questions about what we've been talking about at 800-222-9455. Have you gotten the latest COVID boosters, the bivalent booster? What was your experience with that? If you're holding out, if you haven't gotten it, what's holding you back? Maybe you want to share that with us. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation. Are you worried about RSV in your, do you have young children perhaps who have not been exposed? What are you doing to keep them safe? Again, 800-222-9455. And finally, as we just heard, we may be heading into a bit rougher flu season than we've had for several years based on the fact that people have not been as exposed. And as we just heard again, they had a pretty bad one in the Southern Hemisphere in their winter a few months ago. 800-222-9455 to join our conversation today. More to come on the 21st show. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about infectious diseases and the concerns some have been warning about, a so-called triple-demic, right? COVID-19, expecting another wave of cases there, as well as flu and RSV, which is a respiratory syncytial virus, has been, as we just discussed before the break, striking very young children who maybe because of the pandemic had not been exposed to disease as much in the past few years. And we're now seeing a lot of cases of those popping up and filling pediatric hospitals. We're talking about this with Dr. Larry Kosiolek, who is infectious disease physician and medical director of infection prevention and control at the Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago. Dr. Robert Healy, associate chief medical officer of quality at the Carle Health System based in Urbana. And Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, professor and chief of infectious diseases at SIU School of Medicine in Springfield. 800-222-9455 to join our conversation today. And Dr. Sundaresan, I want to ask about COVID-19 now. Which variants are of concern for this coming season? Where are we with that?
Yeah, so, you know, all this while we were talking about BA5, so Omicron is still the predominant circulating strain, but that has subvariants. We discussed this as a variant swarm now, multiple different variants. What is now kind of increasing in the level of circulation is another subvariant called BQ1 or BQ1.1. We've seen that circulate in a lot of countries in the Europe. Germany saw very high numbers from the BQ1.1. UK saw some higher numbers with hospitalizations increasing. France saw that as well. Luckily, it didn't become too much of a problem. Germany did see that increase by about a one-third, but they're expecting that number to go down as well. We've seen some of that happen in New York and some of the East Coast states. And typically, we see similar patterns occurring in the Midwest a few weeks or months later from what we see on the East Coast as well. So the speculation now is about 27% of the circulating strains are these newer variants, BQ1 or BQ1.1. They are with an ability to evade the immune system. That's what we're seeing with the newer strains, that they can evade the immune responses and also have a tendency to have increased transmission as well as, you know, the severity of the disease as well. And it varies with the Omicron strains that are circulating. Other countries are also seeing another strain called XBB, but which we haven't seen here, but that has been seen in some of the Asian countries.
And Dr. Sundaresan, are the vaccines and the boosters still effective at, you know, what they're meant to do, maybe not preventing infection, but keeping people from getting sick at all, but preventing severe disease and death?
Yes, for most part, yes. Even with the newer strains that we are seeing, we expect that the bivalent vaccine, which has the ancestral strain as well as the Omicron antigens, that is effective against the upcoming newer variants as well. Some of the studies that they're looking at to typically understand the exact efficacy of the bivalent are small size studies. We're still awaiting data from that as to what the exact efficacy is. But for most part, the belief is that they are effective against the newer strains as well.
All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Catherine is calling from Springfield on line four. Catherine, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome.
What's your question?
Well, I don't have a question. I was just calling in because I did get the BA15 or BA5? I always forget what number it is, but the last booster.
The bivalent booster.
Bivalent, yeah. Okay. I got the first booster, did not get the second, and chose to go ahead and get the last one. I don't have any questions.
Let me ask you this. I understand you told our producer that you're sort of not really doing the masking, the COVID guidelines anymore. Is that true?
I just recently, probably, I'm a retail worker.
Okay.
So within the last, and I worked throughout the whole pandemic for a major company that, you know, has both groceries and regular items. I just recently stopped masking. I have masked throughout this whole pandemic. The only time that I did not was prior to getting COVID, and I got COVID back in the end of June, beginning of July, around July 4th weekend, and it was after I had worked as an election poll judge at an election, and I didn't mask then, and then I didn't mask when I went back to work the next day, and sure enough, that next day, I got sick.
Yeah.
So, but I'm starting to notice that a lot of coworkers are getting sick recently, so I may mask back up.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing your experience and your perspective. I appreciate you calling in. Dr. Healy, let me ask you about that, because I noticed the governor recently pulled back on the mask mandate for healthcare institutions, which had been one of the very last places that masks were required. I think this was about a week or two ago, basically changed it to recommended in areas with high transmission. What is Carl doing about that? And what do you think in general about whether people ought to mask up in public or, let it rip, as they say?
Yeah, a great question and, great experience to talk about from your caller. I think that, so what we're doing at Carle Health, I think, which probably mirrors a lot of what the other systems are doing, is when the rates are very high in our county, we're still requiring masking at our clinical sites. So every week we take a look at the CDC data. This week, Champaign County is high, so we are requiring masking in our clinical settings. There's a couple different numbers that we look at. The transmission rates actually aren't high in this county, so our non-clinical sites, masking isn't required. But in general, what I would recommend to people is they need to do what they feel comfortable with. They understand their own personal risk. They understand whether or not they've been vaccinated or are up to date or have gotten the latest bivalent booster. They understand who's at home. Are they caring for a loved one who, if they got ill, could have a really bad time. So, you know, I think masking is a personal choice right now, and I think it's a good idea to mask. I think it's very helpful or can be very helpful in preventing the other viruses we're talking about, the other respiratory viruses. You know, keeping distance, masking, hand washing, staying home if you're sick, masking for sure if you have symptoms, even if you don't know what it is, and then checking to see with your provider what it might be. These are all important things right now.
Yeah, masking to protect yourself, certainly if you feel comfortable with that or you feel like you need that. I've done that myself. I was probably one of the last people to take off the mask in general over the summer, and then, you know, was getting more comfortable with that. But now if I'm in a shopping center and it's really crowded, or a small store as opposed to a large, you know, airy grocery store with a tall ceiling, I will put the mask back on. But definitely, as you said, if you are feeling at all sick, and to protect others, very important there. Let's get another caller in. Rich is calling from Champaign on line one. Rich, thanks for the call.
Hi, yes. So I got the bivalent vaccine, and then about 10 days later, I ended up becoming infected. And I'm wondering what, and I also took a course of Paxlovid. I'm wondering what are the chances, and I know that's hard to describe, of becoming reinfected.
Reinfected just in a general way? Sure. Let's, Dr. Kosiolek, I don't know if you want to tackle that one.
Sure. So, you know, I think the boosters and the vaccines are obviously quite effective, particularly preventing hospitalization and death. And estimates are still well over 90% effective for both of those. The ability to prevent infection, those numbers are going to require larger studies and more real-world studies. The studies that go into approving boosters are typically immunological outcomes. And so they look at antibodies and say, oh, this booster caused a better antibody response than the original vaccine. How that translates into protection from infection, those studies will be done as we start giving this booster out in large numbers, and we follow COVID activity in the communities. Certainly, the risk for reinfection based on what we've observed over the course of the pandemic, is going to increase around 5 to 6 months after you receive the booster. And so whether or not utilizing newer boosters that have a broader activity against new variants, and whether there's any impact of stacking boosters, and then also additional natural immunity from infection that may or may not occur in individuals who are vaccinated, how those are going to impact the risk of reinfection needs to be determined. But we do know for a fact that antibodies will wane over time. And after usually about 5 or 6 months after vaccine or infection, your risk of reinfection will increase around that time.
If I could add,
please.
I think it's an important point. You know, the caller got sick 10 days after the vaccine, and of course, one would wonder, well, could the vaccine cause me to get sick? And it's clear that the vaccines do not cause you to get that infection. So if you get a COVID-19 vaccine, if you get the new bivalent booster, that will not make you sick. It's not possible. If you get the influenza vaccine, that will not make you sick. It's not possible. What does happen is, you know, dozens of people that we know are getting sick right now. Some of them got a vaccine, some of them didn't. If they got the vaccine, they wonder if it might have caused it. But I want to reassure people that it does not cause you to get either the influenza or COVID-19 if you got one of those vaccines.
No, great point. And I mean, you mentioned the caller, or I mentioned the caller was from Champaign, and as you said, high transmission in the community. So just very well likely a coincidence.
Exactly.
And then you happen to get infected somewhere out in the community. I teased this at the beginning of the conversation. I want to come back to this RSV question and this idea of the triple-demic. I think it was in the Washington Post we saw that. That's one of the things that inspired this conversation today. And Dr. Kosiolek, what do you think about that and the way the media is sort of raising the alarm about, you know, overstressed children's hospitals and that sort of thing?
Yes, thanks for bringing that up. You know, I'm not a big fan of this triple-demic term, and there's several reasons for that. first, the term triple-demic implies that we're going to have an issue with RSV and flu only if we see a surge of COVID-19 in the winter. And I can assure you that there's a problem here and now with RSV and soon with influenza that is going to challenge and stress children's hospitals, even if we don't have another COVID-19 case for the rest of the winter. That's not going to happen. But we don't need COVID-19 to make this a pressing issue. As mentioned earlier, I think the term triple-demic implies that there's something new or unknown or mysterious about RSV and influenza, and there just simply isn't. This is what returning to normal is, right? And we now live in a society where we are shifting our COVID-19 strategy to focus on vaccines, medications, prioritizing care for those who are at higher risk, and that's going to entail lifting some mitigation measures. We need to have kids in school. These are very important things that need to happen. And so with that, returning to normal is going to cause a return of the normal things that we saw before COVID, which includes influenza and RSV. And third, I think the triple-demic focuses on the pathogen. It implies that there's something about these bugs that we need to control. And things would be a whole lot easier if we had a pediatric healthcare capacity that we had similar prior to COVID-19. And so I think those are the main points about why I think that the triple-demic may present the current healthcare issue in a way that does not focus on the specific problems and the specific solutions that we need.
Well, and that goes back to your earlier point about RSV has not changed. What has changed is the lack of immunity in the public because kids were kept out of the infection's way, and the lack of capacity in the hospital system, which is a choice that hospital administrators have made in the past few years. We're almost out of time. I want to squeeze in a text from one of our listeners, Dr. Sundaresan. Jean in Champaign said, has all the shots, tries to be conservative in their contacts with others. Masks are important, he says, more to remind us about the danger, perhaps, than actually providing protection. But he says, reality is COVID is like its cousin, the common cold. There will likely not be an end to it. Best we can hope for is to build up individual immunity and ride it out. Dr. Sundaresan, I wonder, what do you think about that sort of attitude out there? And again, in about a minute we have left.
Yeah, you know, we have learned a lot in the last 2 years, and we know what works, what doesn't. We are kind of getting better at that knowledge. So definitely continue to practice, hand washing and other things that you do to prevent respiratory viruses. I think that's going to be a part of the winter season. As we go back indoors, the risk increases. Just like our previous speaker was commenting, with return of a lot of the things that we did prior to the pandemic, prior to the COVID pandemic, we are going to see some differences in epidemiology. We just have to continue to track what's going on, and continue to have practices which we know work.
All right. Dr. Vithya Sundaresan is professor and chief of infectious diseases at the SIU School of Medicine in Springfield. Dr. Larry Kosiolik is medical director of infection prevention and control at the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago. And Dr. Robert Healy is associate chief medical officer of quality at the Carle Health System based in Urbana. Dr. Healy, Dr. Sundaresan, Dr. Kosiolik, thank you so much for making the time to be with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. And thank you to everyone who called and texted in. I suspect we will continue having this conversation in future segments in the weeks and months ahead as we watch what is happening out there with COVID-19, the flu, and RSV. Stay safe. Get your immunizations, everyone. And keep listening. More to come on the 21st Show after a short break. Stay with us.